Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel. Nick Roush and Adam Luckett talking a little Kentucky football, a little SEC football. And the last time we were here, we were waiting on Wandale Robinson. Well, he made us wait all the way till Friday. But before lunchtime, we were already popping bottles, doses and mimosas, champagne and other stuff. Man, that was a throwback song. Really enjoyed that song in college. Sorry for that. Quick little detour, but man, Wandale Robinson's a Kentucky Wildcat, Adam Luckett.
Yep, it's what we thought. We thought it might be a smokescreen there with Nebraska, or excuse me, Purdue. Seems maybe that's what it was, but Friday, early in the day, too. I think it was like 10 a.m., 10:30, 11, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was set to share my, like, I was going to go on with Ryan and them and be like, hey, everybody, don't worry about Purdue at 10:30. And as soon as they went to commercial break, the news broke.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. So it was, it was great timing. And I'm glad he didn't wait until like 3 o'clock and news dump us like the freaking league office did over the summer with that bull crap.
I was worried about that. It's nice to get it out of the way. Maybe had to wait a little longer than we wanted, but he's come back home like we all predicted, and it's a big deal to get a proven playmaker added to this offense, a guy with an NFL future, a guy they can use in a lot of different ways at the wide receiver position. It's just going to be another tool for Liam Cohen to utilize. And now you look at the offense. They've got some nice tools to play with. You look at Darian Kennard at right tackle, Chris Rodriguez at tailback, Keaton Upshaw at tight end. Now you're adding Wandale Robinson to the mix. And you look at the returning production receiver-wise, I think Kentucky brings back their top six pass catchers with Rigg and Ali coming back. And then you add a transfer like Robinson to that group. I think that should get you excited for some of the potential of the pass game. Now that they have some pieces back and they're going to kind of modernize the offense in some certain ways, I think something to be very excited about for 2021.
I very much enjoyed the Scott Frost slander and the aftermath. Like, we aren't going to play this guy to running back. He's an NFL wide receiver. What kind of idiot would do that? Just really love the kind of thinly veiled shot to Scott Frost.
Yeah. And Connor O'Gara, who writes for that Saturday Down South, and he also writes for like the Big Ten version of Saturday Down South. I guess it's under the same media umbrella. He kind of wrote a post with just like with Frost. It was pretty much, how can you even trust him at this point? It's 2 years in a row they lost a leading receiver. The guy, his name is escaping me right now, but he transferred to TCU, and then Robinson this year. Just some warning signs that it's not really working out there. The quarterback play's been rough.
Mm-hmm. Man, how wild is it? Like I said this on the radio. I found out about it on my radio show, but the only winning season he's ever had as a head coach was the undefeated season, which is just remarkable to me how quickly everybody drank the UCF Scott Frost Kool-Aid. I mean, he was only there 2 years. Now, granted, it went from, 1-10 to 13-0, in 2 years, which is incredible. But, like, Stoops would talk about it with Grant and the offenses they had at Cincinnati. Like, you can get away with some stuff in that league. You can't get away with stuff in big boy leagues. And, the Big Ten, they're not – it's better. But it's the Big Ten West, and he can't even win games there. I love watching that guy suck, and I'm happy to take advantage is the wrong word, but hey, you had your shot, buddy. You actually hit the jackpot, and then you went and went bankrupt within 2 years. We're gonna use that jackpot, that lotto ticket, and even though some of that money's been spent, we're gonna turn it into some gold here in Lexington.
Two things there with the Frost. I think it's very important in college football to not fall in love with the one-hit wonders. Tom Herman had that great season at Houston.
Mm-hmm.
The next season, not so great. Now he goes to Texas. He's in over his head. I think Jamie Chadwell is kind of that guy right now.
Yeah.
People talking about, and that he's going up. He was the candidate for Vanderbilt. I've seen his name get thrown into Tennessee. Like, I just want to – let's see you do it another year. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see you layer big seasons together. And then with Frost, I think the biggest thing for him, and I think it's kind of the reason Malzahn's no longer at Auburn, it's the reason Chad Morris has struggled. Frost came off the Chip Kelly tree where they were running tempo, and teams just didn't know how to defend it. I think people have caught up to that. And I think that's why you see some of the Frost offense at Nebraska, Malzahn's offenses at Auburn, Chad Morris at Arkansas and Auburn. You've just seen that the base of what they do is to go fast, go 100 miles per hour. But now teams are just used to that, and I don't think they've had a counter to that. And I think that's why Malzahn is a free agent right now, Chad Morris is a free agent, and Frost is in a weird spot because Nebraska is all in on him, but what he's doing is not working.
Man, I loved Mark Stoops today on KSR talking about tempo. He went – so, like, I know that Matt and Ryan, like, they love having Stoops on KSR to just be a little bit more candid, you know, and he'll slip up and he'll curse a few times. But usually those candid conversations are limited to just talking about the guys or how things unfolded or whatever that may be. And it's generally it's usually the kind of general media stuff that we're all used to. Today, he went on and on and on, like X's and O's nerdy football stuff. And first and foremost, I just would have loved to have seen the look on Matt's face when he started talking about split zones and pin and pull. Like, I was at least happy that Matt made him clarify pin and pull, which in a post tonight, I shared a video that, like, It's kind of easy to describe, but if you just see it happen, two guys block down, you pull a guard. We called it the belly play.
It's exactly
when I played Pee Wee football. Like. Yeah. You pin the guys down, you pull a guard outside. But when he was going in depth, he was like, you know, tempo's great at times, but like a lot of these teams, they're just running plays to run plays. He's like, that's not good football. You're just wasting your time. And you're not even trying to attack the defense's weaknesses. And like, that's the kind of thinking that I like my head coach to have. Like, and it's just not guys out there trying to bombard you with quantity. There needs to be some quality in there. And the tempo that he's talking about is like, hey, you can get in a huddle and then run up to the line of scrimmage really quick and still deceive the defense. Like, there's different ways to do this. You don't just need to be play after play after play, because you know what? Offenses get tired too. Like, the rules have changed to where you aren't just going to be catching teams completely off guard. Like you said, they've caught up to it. And the way Stoops talked about tempo and the different running styles, it got me fired up as a football nerd, because we rarely hear him talk like that.
Yeah, you know, that's – now you also can get from Stoops is that was kind of like some film room talk, which was exciting to hear, especially for somebody that's in all into that kind of stuff. But it's, again, it's the things we've talked about here on 11 personnel, moving the platform for the quarterback, easy predetermined reads, getting the outside zone, because outside zone, like he said, you can really, what he was getting at, I think, was getting more explosive type plays.
Instead of like 5 yards at a time.
Right. Inside, you're it's more power game, but pretty much. And then outside, you can bust off some more long runs. And it under center, which is something we've talked about, how that's going to set up the play action game and some of the boots and some of the flow you can do off of that with the receivers and the condensed formations. And then I think I'm glad he brought that up, the condensed formations with the receivers, which is something I've talked about a lot. basically what that does, last year we saw teams just say, you know, pretty much give Kentucky receivers a finger in the game and said, you can't beat us one-on-one. They're pretty much just challenging you, but Kentucky did not adjust well. And so what they've done now is with these condensed formations, Nick, it makes it where it's pretty much impossible to play man-to-man. You can't just line up and play press man because one rub and then you're wide open. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So what it does is create zones. And then with those zones, you can look to the line of scrimmage. Cohen can have a check, hopefully, or somebody can see based on film study, and you're like, okay, they're in cover three. All right, Bo, look at your wristband. 1, 2, 3. That you know, it's just what they study all week. That's kind of what LSU did with Joe Brady last year. Joe Burrow would line up. Joe Burrow would look to the sideline, and he would just have predetermined reads for him on most plays. McVay did that with Goff his first big year, and that was something that Goff really allowed him to take a big jump. And I think that's what you're going to see next year. There's going to be a lot of predetermined reads because they're going to get teams out of press man coverage, make them drop into zones, and that should create some easy throws for the quarterback. And I think that's something we're going to see a lot of. And with Kentucky's personnel this year, you're going to see, you know, a tight end there, but you're also going to see two shifty receivers in Ollie and Wandell Robinson. So it's going to be an interesting matchup for defenses to try to figure out.
And first things first, it's the concept of this is very simplistic. And you would do it when you play like intramural flag football. Like, let's get in a bunch and then just run some mesh stuff. And one guy's going to get open because the guys you're playing against, somebody's just going to mess up. Like, this stuff works at the college level too.
Yeah.
And then to take it a step further, what I like about having the tight ends is you can do this stuff without getting in just a trips bunch formation with three wide receivers. So like when you would play NCAA football, that trips bunch formation was great for the toss sweeps, you know, cause you had guys there ready to block down. But in this instance, you can have, it can just be 12 personnel where it's like your kind of base package where you've got an H back there lined up, you know, 2 yards behind the tight end and put somebody in motion. And then that creates a natural mesh 2 yards down the field. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like that's where things can get really fun, and you can run the same plays over and over just with slightly different, you know, just out of different formations. It keeps it simple. And that's like Stoops didn't go into as much detail. I don't think you really want to show your entire hand when it comes to stuff like this, but I'm glad he at least kind of mentioned that. Cause they face some pretty good corners, and that's the easiest way to mitigate that problem that you have throughout this league.
We saw when Leach played Pelini all the way back in September, they played man, and he just created rubs and little picks, and they were wide open for a record setting day. And then everybody else played them, you know, dropped in a zone. So there's going to be that's the real goal, I think, of the offense. And we've gotten proof today from words pretty much saying it is the Rams style that they're getting. It's not what Cohen did before. It's specifically the Rams. It's the outside zone. It's the condensed formations. It's the bootlegs. That's what the offense is going to be. And then the mixing up tempos I thought was interesting. You know, they can get in their 4-minute offense, but they can also do some things like I would assume like some muddle huddles where you're doing a little quick huddle and getting to the line. You could go no huddle there for a couple plays in a row. That's something Kentucky really hasn't experimented with at all. And I think it's something that could maybe go in their favor, especially with a veteran offensive line and a veteran skilled talent position. Really, when you look at Rondell Robinson coming over, he's got 2 years at Nebraska. You look at Ali Upshaw and Rig at tight end, Rodriguez, Smoke in the backfield. Like, you got some old guys on the roster that should have the capacity to, you know, be able to learn some stuff and be able to catch some stuff on the fly. So I think that was really interesting because we thought of Stoops as kind of this ball control, ball control, ball control. That's what everything is. It's just ball control. Well, really now you see them kind of make it the transition of we need to score more points. We need to mix some stuff up, and some of that comes with tempo. And I think that was a good thing to hear today.
Yeah. No, And it also makes sense why Cohen was the man. And it's not just the kind of after the fact talk, but how excited he got talking about the different ways to run the football and how it can, like, you're building off of what you already have.
Yeah. He thinks they can unlock some more stuff in the ground game where they can be even more efficient and explosive. Because what they were doing previously was just a lot of inside stuff. And then really the only outside stuff they've really done was really the Q run with the counters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like he said, I've never seen them run outside. I'm not saying they haven't, but I've never seen it from all my game watching. So it's going to be something new and something different, but I think it's exciting. And they're inheriting a good offensive line to kind of, you know, take on more of that stuff because they've got two guys at right guard and right tackle that are pretty dang good, and Fortner
mm-hmm.
and Kennard that they're going to lean on heavily, I would think, for those new run actions.
No, you're exactly right. Stoops, he spoke for an hour on KSR today, and I was curious if there were any other things that really jumped out at you, aside from the kind of X's and O's talk he had there.
I'm trying to think. Not necessarily. I would say, I guess, just the whole recruiting philosophy, why this was a small class, because they mm-hmm. knew the transfer thing was happening.
And the kind of, like, who knows with returners as well, you know? Like,
right.
We're kind of just going to have to keep it close to the vest. But he did confirm they're going to be adding some more bodies, whether it's now or whether it's in May, you know, that could change. And he also, the one thing that I, man, you want to talk about, if there was not bingo, but I'm thinking more of player props and who Stoops would give a shout out to.
Mm-hmm.
Guy I did not see coming was Tay-Tay Crooms, a guy who,
yeah.
I mean, look at this. It's not an exaggeration. I have not heard from him since media day his freshman year 2 years ago. Now he's going to his third year of the program, and now Stoops is saying he's got some wiggle. I expect him. I'm hoping he takes a big step forward.
Yeah, I did not expect to see that. That was a guy I thought we could see pop in the portal at any time now. But he has some traits when you look at his high school tape. Like, it's speed, a guy that can take the top off the defense. So I was very surprised to hear that. But like I talked about last week, I think it's these Louisville recruits, I think it's important to develop some of these guys and get these guys to be players because they've got a lot of momentum there right now. And if you can develop these guys and have them produce, it's going to even help you out even more in the city of Louisville. And for that guy, for Crooms, and like some other players, it's just a fresh start on mm-hmm. offense. And some guys, you know, you just needed that because maybe things didn't go their way or they were not, you know, thought of too highly by the old coaches. Now you got a clean slate. You got a chance to do really, it's like transferring, but not transferring because mm-hmm. you're staying at some place, but you get a new coach, a new head honcho of the offense. So you got a chance to make a big first impression. So when specifically talking about that, it's a huge, huge spring for a lot of guys because there is a roster crunch. Like, there's a cut line, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a handful of guys that aren't going to be there. Maybe be around for spring ball that won't be there come fall camp. So it's put up or shut up time for a few guys, I would say, on the roster. And Croons may be around that. You know, he may be a guy that needs to have a pretty big spring.
Well, and for me, we heard it with Ali. I mean, it's certainly applies to Wandale, but like the most successful wide receivers in that McVay system haven't necessarily been, you know, the guys who are just dudes out there on the edge.
Yeah, but he also hadn't had those guys either. I think that's something to remember too.
Like, yeah,
everybody wants a Julio Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
He had to adjust to his personnel, which is which is what all coaching is, but specifically kind of the NFL. You get who you get, and you have to roll with that. So, but yeah, I think with Kentucky's roster, it's a lot of similar to kind of what the Rams had, and so you got to make it work with the guys you got.
And Tate, personally, I want the Butler kid to do well. Butler, my dad's alma mater, he was a Bear. He back when he was playing, he only played basketball though. He's basketball and baseball. He was a pretty boy. The uniforms, the basketball uniforms they had back in the day were incredible. Red, white, and blue with like a bunch of the zigzags were supposed to look like a bear claw ripping through the jersey. But Suda E, as some around here like to refer to it at times, they're keeping the lively and shively, and I'd like to see Tay-Tay bring the lively shively to Lexington. When I watched him play in high school, craziest ending to a football game I've ever seen. And they were playing my DeSales team and had no business losing. And I think they got a punt blocked. And then DeSales threw a Hail Mary and won on that. Like, it was wild. I'm not getting the details right, but there was so many just dumb things that went the wrong way that caused them to lose. Because I was in an interview with Tay-Tay afterwards, and it was such a devastating loss. I was like, can't do that. That would be kind of mean at this point, because they should not have lost. But the block punt, there was a bad flag in there too, I think. And then they just chucked it deep and Hail Mary for the win. That was fun, man. Miss going to high school games. The pandemic's made it weird. I've been watching high school basketball games on NFHS, and it's so weird, like, it because they have just there's not a kid behind a camera. It's one of those cameras that's like motion activated or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it works great, but like sometimes you'll miss some things. Sometimes you don't even know what's happening with the score because you can't just look up to the scoreboard. But it's, you know, it's not the same as being there. And I miss it. Luckily, JCPS, they're getting back to high school basketball at the end of the month. I don't know what took so long. Like, it's like COVID stuff aside, you know, delaying stuff a month ain't going to change how this pandemic goes. Like, it's not going to get dramatically better in a month. I don't care how many vaccines you got. It's just not. We're a year into this thing now. So, like, the whole reason for delaying it, like, I get not bringing kids back to school. It's exponentially more kids than the 10 per school or 30 per school that would have to play sports. But, I mean, some of that stuff, you know, people just, they're CYA and they're covering your ass. And, you know, we live CYA free here at 11 Personnel. We just shoot from the hip.
That's right. No liability clauses here.
No, none at all. One other thing that I was shocked to hear Mark Stoops say on KSR, he seemed, the events that have unfolded at the University of Tennessee, not only did they not surprise him, he was happy to see it happen.
That's coming from a guy that has recruited against Tennessee fairly often in the last couple of halls.
And I love the fact that it's like.
There's also what's through it. I just want to, before we get out there, like, I've never confirmed this. This is just kind of me reading the tea leaves, but Mark Stoops was at 3 years, was at Florida State. He built this a defense. Pruitt gets to come in, say, 1 year, wins the national championship, and pretty much got all the credit. Like, personally, I think there's probably a little something, there that Stoops doesn't love. And then Pruitt kind of gets the Alabama job, was at Georgia, gets the Tennessee job. I think there's a little something there.
In all of that aside, I just love the fact that Stoops does not mind taking shots at rivals. Like, between Louisville and Satterfield, is just like, I mean, what? This is a rivalry, buddy. Grow up. Whenever Satterfield tried to complain about the L's down. And then in this instance, it's like, well, you know what? I'm glad it happened to him. You know, take that. I'm grateful it happened, is the way he put it. And
he's a Kentucky guy now. Hates Tennessee. Oh,
man, it's great. It's so great. And the recruiting battles they've had with some of those guys got nasty. Mm-hmm. I know Ripka was one that they won out for. Oxendine was one that got nitty gritty on. And then the kid that went to Knoxville Catholic.
Tyler Barron.
Yeah, that one felt like one that Tennessee got their claw. You know, they might have dropped a happy meal or two off. Like, it felt like UK was very confident something was going to happen. But that was the case where his dad worked for them, and they kind of, you know, they did what they had to do to make it happen. And I love that Stoops now is happily getting the last laugh, because Knoxville's burning, man. It's on fire.
Before we're going to dive into Tennessee, and I've kind of been waiting for this since that Gator Bowl fiasco, the shuffle where all of you all heard my thoughts about Philip Fulmer. But how about in the last few months, Dan Patrick becoming a walking message board? Like, he had all the Ohio State stuff or the Big Ten. Nebraska's going to leave the Big Ten. And now he's got
– And also –
That's the ultimate, like – I swear that's the ultimate message board, like, byline post.
And also
– Got like a bag full of cash.
This is like, stuff – like, Dan Patrick's never been a newsbreaker either. So – the fact that he got all that Big Ten stuff right, I don't question this stuff. He was calling out Tennessee weeks ago, and he's been banging the Georgia drum as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe they're next. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I don't know. But, you know, yeah. It was like, yeah. And Stoops kind of echoed the sentiment that Patrick had, that they were sloppy. And you know what? Tennessee... what goes around comes around. And your boy Phil Fulmer, he had a rough Monday. He had a real rough Monday.
Let's go through the timeline here. Okay.
Because was it Wednesday night last week where you named Kevin Steele interim head coach in waiting?
Yeah. Well, I want to go back just general. Fulmer gets hired. He has a coup again, his second major coup at the University of Tennessee. In the last three decades, he takes over before they could hire Mike Leach. He comes out, blows up the search, interviews three guys, hires Jeremy Pruitt. Jeremy Pruitt's first year, hires the staff. They stink. They go 5-7. They got two upsets over Auburn and Kentucky, which they really had no business winning those games. They had embarrassing blowout losses. Vanderbilt smoked them. Florida smoked them. Georgia smoked them. Everybody they lost to, it was a bad loss. So they go into the offseason and they gut this entire staff. They go out and pay Jim Chaney, but $2 million, whatever. They go and hire Derek Ansley for over $1 million to run the defense. So they invest big time in Pruitt, which is Fulmer's doing. Like, Fulmer has to approve all that. They get all that approved. They build him. He wanted a new practice field, a new some addition to the facility. They build all of that. It's done. He wanted a third practice field is what it was. They had two practice fields, but Pruitt needed three. So they go on. He wins the six games in a row after losing to Georgia State. They're going to take a bite out of everybody's ass. He gets a raise in September right before the season starts. They win two games. They go into Georgia game this year, Nick. And you would have thought it was a top 10 matchup to talk into that game. Like, I think Tennessee walked into Sanford Stadium that day thinking they're going to win. Well, they got their ass kicked. They turn around the next week, Kentucky kicks their ass. And then it just a landslide from there. And so we get to this point, and at the end of the season, before they play A&M, all of a sudden there's that leak that there's an investigation.
Boom, boom, boom.
Their starting running back didn't play. Their backup quarterback, who was supposed to be in the rotation, Brian Maurer, didn't play. Not really COVID related. They're supposed to play in a bowl game. COVID pops up. They cancel the bowl game. They have a hiring freeze.
That lasted what, a week?
And then they hire Kevin Steele, who was a finalist when they hired Pruitt. And Steele, if some people remember that following the coaching search, he tried to pull a coup himself. After Malzahn got fired, he tried to hurry up and get some boosters to pressure the AD, the new AD there, to hire him as head coach. So he comes in, and then I guess, what, a week and a half later, We find out that Jeremy Pruitt and six other assistants are fired for what's essentially paying players. I'm guessing is what we're
dropping bags,
right?
Yeah, being the cheatinest cheaters that ever cheated,
right? So this whole thing, Fulmer comes in like you cannot. It's just not 1989 anymore. Like you just can't. Like it's not like, you know, you retire as a coach. Yeah, you go be like the assistant principal at high school or whatever.
Yeah, that's what it used to be like back in the day. It just, the coaches were the ADs.
It's just, that's not how the stuff works anymore. What you saw at Auburn is how it's supposed to work. Like the AD takes the information from the boosters. He listens to the interim guy and then goes out and does a long search and then makes the best decision. You don't do what Tennessee has done, where you let your famous alumni coach kind of come in and wedge out your athletic director to hire a guy that really, like Pruitt, what, like he wasn't Kirby smart. You know what I'm saying? Like there was definitely some thing there with, like, you know, how good is this guy? Would he manage the program? There's definitely some kind of small time stuff. I think for him, where he was going to have some major job training, like everyone does, but he didn't seem like he was on the level for the Tennessee gig, but he gets it anyway. Fulmer, they tried to do the Barry Alvarez Wisconsin thing. It failed, it failed tremendously. They have, you know, two of the, you know, that the run, his 3-year run, he won six close games in their winning streak. But other than that, it was as bad as Dooley's in a lot of ways, because the losses were awful. I mean, they were blowouts.
And they were paying like $2 million to assistant coaches too. I mean, they were spending money out the wazoo to a good coaching staff. And really, what do they have to show for? As Phil Fulmer said, well, the recruiting was certainly pretty good.
Yeah, how about that?
The thing is, like, he's a guy who's been talking to the media for a long time. This is his last, like, just get me through this, and then, my last hurrah, it's over with, I'm done. I can just go away and be the guy that won in 98. Well, he's been so used to the canned answer of, like, defending Jeremy Pruitt that – well, the recruiting's been good, the future's bright, that he just went right back to it, even though he was in a press conference announcing the termination of Pruitt, who was fired for cheating while recruiting. I mean, the irony was just magnificent.
One of the most SEC moments of all time.
I can't even, like, I mean, that's going to live in infamy. That's got to be in the montages of, you know, when they have those clips of, like, Auburn's going to win the football game. You've got to add Phil Fulmer saying, recruiting was good. That really long, awkward pause. Oh my God. That was devastating.
Yeah. And then they have the chancellor, which is like the president of the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And then you have the president of the UT system. So I guess he oversees UT Martin,
yeah,
Chattanooga, whatever other schools. Or
East Tennessee State, maybe, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if Middle Tennessee fell under that or not.
Yeah, I don't know either. But at least Martin. They both. Yeah.
But they both, those guys, both that the chancellor, lady, I can't think of her name, and then the president. They both take a torch to Jeremy Pruitt. Like, how, saying that, you know, how this is wrong. What he did was unbelievable. We couldn't believe it. We're going to find somebody with, you know, integrity in the right way. All while the guy that's supposed to be overseeing him through all of this is just sitting there. And then they sit there and say, you know, Fulmer's a good coach. We remember him. We still admire him the same as we did when he rose at Crystal Ball in Tempe in 98.
That was the wildest statement of them all. We're as proud of him now as when he won the national championship. Like, dude, you're forcing him to retire because he made such a horrific hire. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I just, they're the gift that keeps on giving. And I will give them credit. Like, as long as Fulmer there, I stood firm on this. Like, they were never, nothing good was going to happen. Like, it was, they were going to be a train wreck, because you can't, you just can't operate that way anymore. It just doesn't work like that. And then you've got a coach out there who's firing defensive line coaches 4 games into the season. And then says,
in the middle of games,
and he says, oh, I'm not, I'll coach position. Like, dude, you got 800,000 things to do. Like, what are you doing? The same head coach who gets the Tennessee job and says, oh, well, I'm going to call the defense. Like, that's – Nick Saban doesn't even call his own defense. There's only one – like, Gary Patterson is the only defensive coach I know that calls the defense. Everyone else has to give it up because it's too much.
Hell,
there's
Stoops –
too much other stuff to do.
Only did it whenever DJ Elliott, like, went off the reservation halfway through the 14th season, maybe?
Well, he had to – yeah, it was 16. And he had to, because remember, they were giving up – they gave up 50 points in New Mexico State. Jim McElwain dropped 45 on them. They lost. Yeah. Southern Miss scored like 45 on them.
That was a break glass in case of emergency.
Right, yeah. Right. That was just like, let's fix it. I'll just handle this right now and then get to the end of the year.
And then it's one of those things like it. I don't know which part of this is funnier to me. Because there's been so many just beautiful contradictions. Between the Fulmer statement, what the chancellors were saying, and then the fans just, they are so adamantly speaking on how they're reminding everybody, we are not mad. I promise you, we are not mad. We are not mad right now. We are so not mad. I'm not mad. So guys, just accept it. You're the punchline of the SEC right now. You're the biggest losers. Like, you did it. Vandy even knows how to hire a football coach better than you. They've had how many coaches in Derek Mason's tenure alone? Was it 2 or 3?
I'm trying to think if Dooley was there. I'm trying to think when Dooley was fired. But I think it was 2.
Pretty close.
Dooley left before he got there.
But nevertheless, that's
where. Yeah, because Stoops, Butch Jones' first year were 2013. Dooley's last year was 2012.
Gotcha.
So it was 2.
But. I mean, it's just, it amazes me how self-righteous that group of buffoons is. That, I mean, I'm so happy to see this happen to them. It couldn't happen to a better group of people. And, I mean, oh, well, we beat UK the whole time, blah, 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 blah. Just stick it up your pipe and smoke it, buddies. Go cheer. You're a basketball school now? They're getting ran out of the gym by a Florida team that doesn't have their 3 best players right now. I mean, it is – I just love seeing bad things happen to that school. And the best part of this all, Luckett, is that it's not to say that they could have just swept this all under the rug, but, like, this was an internal investigation. Like, this was their own investigation they started.
Yeah, and they're calling on themselves.
Yes, and they did this just to save $12 million because they made a stupid contract extension for Jeremy Pruitt, but they're cutting their nose off despite their face. If this stuff is as bad as it seems right now, what, 2-3 year postseason ban? What do you think the scholarship limitations are going to be? That's probably going to hurt them more than anything else. They are going to be in trouble for at least 3 or 4 years. It is going to take a long time just for them to get back to the shit show they were when they initially hired Fulmer and let him bully John Curry out of hiring Greg Schiano, which, hey guys, Greg Schiano is actually respectable at Rutgers now. He won as many games as you did this year.
Yeah, the Butch Jones was the watermark of this era. 2015, 2016 years, where they were the watermark.
And they what, won on a Hail Mary at Georgia? Like, I mean, just got by on the skin of their teeth with Alvin Kamara, just an all-pro running back there.
But what you said is right, Nick. Taking off their nose despite their face and – telling on themselves and doing all what is just a disaster, it looks like. But this, in order for them to go in the right direction, like, they had to get a new AD and they had to get a new head coach. So if this helps, if this gets them to that point faster, I think it's probably a good move. What I worry about, if I was a Tennessee fan, here would be my concerns right now. But thank the good Lord Jesus, I'm not a Tennessee fan.
Oh God, we wouldn't be friends.
First off, you've got to like, you've got to go all in on this AD search. You have to take your time with it. And you don't have to hire a guy with Tennessee ties, someone that bleeds orange. You just got to hire a good AD. Because the difference between a good AD and a good football coach is a good ADs don't leave their jobs. When you get a good AD, they stay in one place when they get to these schools. Mm-hmm. They don't go anywhere. Get a good AD. And then once you hire that, he needs to get everybody in line, the boosters, and say to everybody, like, what you all did for this last 15 years, it's broken. It doesn't work. We're going to do things my way. We're going to have protocols how we're going to go about doing everything. And then you got to hire a football coach. And hopefully they hire the right one. They're going to have a chance. But like you said, the sanctions are going to make it a little difficult. It's still going to be a good job. But it's just different. Like, for Tennessee, it's hard, man. It's hard for Tennessee and Alabama to be good at the same time. That's their kryptonite. When Tennessee was good with Fulmer, Alabama was down. Now that that Tennessee's gone with this rise with Saban, that's been Tennessee's down period, the lowest period in program history. It's just hard for both of them to be good. So as long as Saban's there, there's a hard cap on them. And then when you look at where Fulmer recruited, like the Carolinas, Clemson's got that locked down right now. So it's just hard. What they need to do is get back in. Tennessee has a talent uprising right now. Nashville's blowing up. They need to try to take over that state. They're letting too many teams come in there and poach players. Try to take over that state and get to a point where you can win 7-8 games and then where you can make a jump when maybe Saban gets out of there. But there's too many cooks in the kitchen. It's kind of the same problems Texas has. Nebraska feels like they finally had everybody pulling in the same direction, but the coach they hired just hasn't been able to get it
stinks.
Done.
Yep, not good.
So it's just they're in a tough spot. Like, they have to realize, like, the expectations are lower, but this might be the thing that drops everybody down a few pegs and calms some of the rough seas. I think going with Kevin Steele right now is probably your best option. But I would be worried about recruiting, because if you got an extended coaching search going on, it could just make things tough. Steele's a pretty good recruiter. Maybe he could kind of do what Matt Luke did, where he kept recruiting at a certain level, and then it's set up for where they could go hire a pretty good coach, which is what seems that they have now in Lane Kiffin. But from Kentucky's point of view, it's an opportunity, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Tennessee is entering this weird period. They're going to have scholarship limitations. They've got this cloud hanging over them. It's going to be all this offseason, all of next season. 2022, they get a new coach in there, but it's going to be probably a tough year zero, where that's kind of, you know, you're going to kind of have to figure stuff out. So where you look at Kentucky, they're kind of peaking right now under Stoops. I think, you know, when you mentioned the Georgia thing, that something may come from that. Florida's kind of a mess. Vandy and Missouri have new South Carolina have new coaches.
Strike while that iron's hot.
There's like, I think, like, what we're seeing kind of develop here, I think, is there's a window for Kentucky right now. Mm-hmm. Satterfield's a mess at Louisville. They're not even getting challenged by them in recruiting for the most part in state. There's a window for Kentucky to strike. And if this hire hits, this offensive coordinator hire, like, people that
dream, hire hits, quarterback hits too.
If the hire hits, like, the dream is to go to Atlanta. If not go to Atlanta, maybe go 10-2 and play in a New Year's Six, like, go to the Sugar Bowl.
Man, what a day,
like,
that would
these,
be.
I think these next 3 years of the year, I think it's right now. Like, what everything Kentucky's built with Stoops, and like, we thought it would be this last year. And then 2018, when they had a chance, but I think the window's here right now. If they hit on the offense, like, it's the opportunity's there. And I think that, from Kentucky's point of view, that's the big thing right now. I think there's, like you just said, got to strike while the iron's hot. It looks like right now you're gonna have your shot to really go out there and make a swing and make a big splash and maybe have a run that you've always dreamt of, like, similar to the run that D'Antonio had at Michigan State, where they're winning 10 games a couple years in a row. Mm-hmm. I think the chance is here, and part of it's doing the Tennessee's down, and maybe that's kind of the first thing that breaks your way. But you talk about the Tennessee streak. It's now it's time for Kentucky to put a win streak together against them.
Woohoo! Man, you got me fired up like it. And it's not just dancing on Tennessee's graves. Sometimes I'm more of a short-term thinker, and I can only just really just enjoy the volunteers, tears, with an emphasis on that part of the word. But I'm glad you spelled it out that way, because it's not just the fact that there's going to be three new coaches next year in the division, but also that, I mean, like, even though Drinkwitz's a pretty good ball coach, like, you can still keep them at bay. Like, that's a big game, but you can keep them at bay.
He and, just lost his defensive coordinator. You don't know.
Yeah.
You know how, because that's.
Mel's Bolton. I mean, it,
yeah. Yeah.
They're recruiting. Like, he's recruiting now, but, you know, that takes a while to get going.
One hit wonders, too, a little bit, kind of thing. You know,
right. Right.
I like him. He's passing some checkpoints, but let's see him. Let's see you layer it together. Because he's going to hit a bump in the road, like, in this league. Like, people are going to figure him out. He's going to have to readjust.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's an exciting time to be a Kentucky fan right now. Man, how long are we gonna have to wait for a schedule?
I know, I'm ready for it now. I need to see how that breaks out. But yeah, you get to, let's talk about that schedule. Like, we don't know it yet, but man, it breaks. Like, it's a nice schedule, man. Three non-conference teams are bad. We get Terry Bowden and Rich Rodriguez coming to Lexington.
Dude, that is hilarious. The fact that not only get Rich Rod, we're gonna get to play his kid too at ULM. Yeah. Were they weren't as bad as Akron last year, but they were close, right? They were like 128th, 129th in FBS.
The bottom fell out on them this past year. Before that, they were some decent years. Like, they were winning 3, 4, 5 games in the Sun Belt, like 5-7, 6-6, being somewhat competitive. But the bottom fell out on them this past year, and that's why Terry Bowden's their new football coach. But yeah, but you look at look at the home schedule. The home schedule is awesome. You get Tennessee, you get Florida, which will probably be early. You get Missouri, who come now. It's a different. I think there's going to be a little more excitement for that Missouri game than there usually is.
Plenty of juice in that game.
And then you get LSU. Those are your four SEC home games.
That's pretty awesome. And you got to go to Starkville. Ooh, I'm sure things are going to be fixed there. Like, this is the you want to talk about another opening.
Yeah,
like,
you want to talk about streaks ending. That's this is all right. It's time to move along, Cowbells. It's time to end that. Like, go down there, play well, and win. Like, it's time.
Oh, man.
But you go to South Carolina, Vanderbilt. Those are both winnable. You're probably your favorite in both those games.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of schedules. So, I got something coming out probably later today. Y'all probably won't be able to listen to it until after this podcast. But I spent earlier this week, I spent an hour talking with Phil Hostins and Quentin Bohanna, just talking ball. You know, it was a big, like, let's just talk about how your careers went, you know, just kind of cutting up a little bit. It was really fun. I think y'all really enjoy it. Just a few things to tease. One thing that I was shocked when I asked him about the 10-game SEC schedule, because, you know, this year was brutal. But they were like, oh, they should do it all the time. Not like, I think the way they put it was, let's do it every other year. But, like, getting up, it's like Bohanna goes, nobody wants to play Toledo. Like, sorry, Phil, nobody cares about Toledo. But getting up each week for that SEC game fired him up. And even though they took their lumps, I was surprised to hear just how much they love the SEC schedule.
I think for them, like, the season stunk for a lot of ways because they couldn't see their family. You're kind of locked in. It was a grind, but it was also a good measuring stick because you got to play good teams every week.
Mm-hmm.
There was never that lull in the schedule. It was always an exciting opponent to go play. I think from that point was probably the best part, which is why eventually we will be going to, like, you heard people talk earlier in the week, they should do this every year, play 10 SEC games every year. I don't think that'll happen, but I definitely think this may push them in the direction to go to 9. But if the SEC team keeps winning championships, they don't really have to do that either.
Right, right. There's no motivation. You know, they don't have to prove it.
They almost got 2 in with playing a 10-game SEC only schedule this year.
Yeah. Also, they confirmed our theory that they think very little of every other team from every other conference. especially in bowl games.
Yeah, yeah.
The bulletin board material we couldn't get before the game. Oh, we got it after the game. So those guys are a treat. Q and Phil, they never hesitate to talk smack. They talk plenty of smack to each other, their teammates. It was a lot of fun. But I did want to save up some of it because it's just, I got so much, it's so much gold. Like, they're talking about playing next to Josh Allen. Like, I mean, imagine getting to rush the passer next to that guy. Like, that would make your life easy. Like, hey, just go get him, Josh. So, that's something y'all certainly should listen to. I'm going to have it up on the YouTube page, the KSR Football podcast feed. There'll be plenty of ways to enjoy all of that. So, just something to keep in your tickler file for later on in the day.
What was the biggest surprise you think you got from that interview, Nick?
My biggest surprise. Biggest surprise is that Phil still has not officially shut the door on another season. Which,
where is he? Doesn't he have to done? I don't know, because he'd be in grad school or whatnot. I know the semester starts, I guess, early next week, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but he's keeping the door open. Like, because there's so much uncertainty with how the NFL is going. Like, are they going to have a pro day? What's the combine doing? They're moving the combine out of Indy for some reason. Like,
well, they're not having it. They're going to have to do like video drills or something.
I don't get it. But the NCAA is moving the entire tournament to Indy, and you can't hold the combine there. Like, I get maybe reducing some numbers, but moving it out of Indy, that just seems stupid.
Yeah.
But the. You know,
I thought they would have the combine. They would just shut out all the media, and they probably tell NFL teams you can't bring 800 people here.
Yeah, yeah. You only get, you know,
15 or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. Which would make sense. But, you know, NFL, who knows? So they should. I think that's part of the reason. But yeah, Phil hasn't completely shut out the door. I did ask him too, who's going to be like, who's the underclassman on the D line that's going to pop out for us? Who do you think they said?
Underclassmen?
Yeah.
Let's say, it seems like a lot of people are big on Oxidine, so I'll say Ox.
They didn't, they actually gave me the PR answer, but they weren't like explicit in it either. Like, it wasn't because they wanted to just, their reasoning behind it was, yeah, because like one of them would do something once a week where like, oh man, that guy's going to be really good. Like, it would kind of rotate as to who was standing out in practice, which I think is really encouraging.
They would say all the freshmen?
Yeah, between all the freshmen, like between Ox and Hayes and Rogers, like, they all would flash at different times.
Yeah.
They were engaged, and that's really encouraging to hear. Not only, like that means that they were probably using this year the right way because they had seniors telling them how to do things the right way. And to not have pressure on those really talented guys, like, that's to go back to your window thing. Like, hell, 2 years from now, they'll still be true sophomores technically, but 3 years in, and 5-star, 4-star prospects. That
I can
fill up some gaps there.
I'm not even gonna count. Like, we can get there when those guys get seniors. Like, to try to add all that up in my head, like, he's a blank freshman or
right, whatnot. Right.
Like, my brain has been trained a certain way for about 30 years. Or 31 years a lot. I don't know. That's just going to be hard to get past. So I'm just going to consider these guys what they usually are until we cross that bridge. But for those three freshmen, I think this is a big spring for them because there's two starting spots wide open next to Pascal. They're in the three down. They're going to get to go up against a good offensive line in spring ball. And there's opportunity for playing time after they learn the ropes their first year. So I think it's a big opportunity. All three of them, I think you could throw Ripka in there too. All three of them could potentially make an impact. But I think spring is important, and I don't know how spring ball is going to work or when it's even going to start.
We don't have dates, but Scott and his Tots, they're doing the traditional. We're going to play spring practice in the snow. We're going to start in February and be done by St. Patrick's Day. That guy, he sucks so much. My God.
They're doing that still?
Yeah. February 18th is when they're starting spring practice. Dude just loathes spring practice. He just wants to get it over with as soon as possible. Makes no sense. Especially when, like, they might open up recruiting in April. They might let you have unofficial visitors, you know?
This is the same guy, Nick, that was at a Luke Combs concert while his quarterback was flipping to Florida State. Like, he's not, you know, all into.
Man, that's great. That's
like,
great.
I don't understand that.
Yeah,
but usually the signing, like, usually the spring, you're so burnt out from the old signing date. Fill out the signing date in February. You need a couple weeks off to kind of recharge your batteries and then get out and practice. Well, and they're just pushing through.
A weightlifting standpoint too, like that's when your gains are. Like UK's. They're mass building and like we're gonna beat our maxes. It's all month of January and February is when they are busting ass to like put like to really make improvements in the weight room. And they, I mean, because they like they give them the month of May off, you know, and like the summer is usually about training for fall and less of, so like to go so early, you're limiting your strength program too. It's just
You can get around that probably. You can just do that stuff in April, I would assume.
Yeah. But still, just eat it, Scott Satterfield.
Yeah, I just, it is.
Loser.
I wonder why he does that. That just seems
off. You're going to love what they say about Louisville, too. Very, it's the best kind of comedy. So,
did you get an answer for him about what he did chasing after Hawkman?
I did. Oh, we'll that's okay. That. It's a lot of fun. It's
we'll
a lot
save
of,
that for the
I'll
piece.
Enjoy it. But I think it's time for us to go. Like, time to just get the hell out of here.
It is, man. It's starting to slow down a little bit. Thankfully, Tennessee gave us plenty of content this week.
Oh, but, yeah. And I'm sure they'll do something else stupid next week or, you know, we'll still get plenty. Hell, we're going to have a Super Bowl matchup after next week. Yeah. So.
Brady's lurking.
Man,
he's lurking.
He is. I would enjoy that. I would enjoy Brady versus Bills too, because like think about the nightmares that Bills fans are gonna have.
Yeah, that would be good.
2 weeks of PTSD. Like Patrick Mahomes is playing though. Like there's no doubt in my mind that the NFL is gonna be like, yes, you've cleared all of the hurdles you need.
The neck probably saves them on that. That it was just a what are they calling it, like a pinched nerve or something.
Right. Because he didn't, like, his head didn't hit the ground. Nobody hit
it. That's what it looked like live, but him getting up was, that was.
Yeah, that looked bad. Yeah.
If he didn't do that, I probably wouldn't be thinking much of it, but that did do that was kind of scary. So we'll see if it gets through protocol.
Man, if the Brownies would have pulled off that upset there, though.
That was a missed opportunity, man. They had because Mahomes is going to be there every year, and they had him down and out. They were right for the taking. They had the game. They had the opportunities, and they just couldn't get it done.
The not having the four down mentality when you're a running football team, you have an incomplete. Like they had a bad run on first down, running on second and third, and make it fourth and three, and then you know, keep the drive.
They were going to do it, and then I think they would have had a decent chance against the Bills, but if they could have gone in there and established a run and kind of dictated the game, but they didn't. That's tough. Man. I thought that was a big opportunity for them. They had a chance, but couldn't get it done.
We're running out of football games though. I think I'm even debating on like asking my parents if the baby can stay with them so I can just get hammered on Sunday and like stuff my face with buffalo wings and just like football.
Yeah, two fun matchups. I'm excited.
It's our last
good championship Saturday or Sunday.
Three football games left, folks. Let's enjoy them while we can. And we hope you enjoyed this. Listen to this podcast of 11 Personnel. Make sure to subscribe, download each week. If you want, go ahead and leave us a review. We might read some reviews next week. Like it. That could be a fun little change of pace.
There we go.
If you feel like insulting us, by all means, you got the green light. But one thing you should always remember to do, go Cats and go Kroger.